donation on a sliding scale. Hope to see you there.
Hello. Sorry to interrupt. I know you're busy enjoying one of your favorite shows on CJSF. But it's me, Robin, host of Roots and Berries on Fridays at noon. And I'm here with a very special delivery. Thank you for listening to CJSF.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
At the moment, there are 45 babies between the neonatal intensive care unit and the special intensive care unit. Without a doubt, if the Israeli army occupies this space, every single one of those babies will die.
Tens of thousands of displaced Palestinians are fleeing Rafah as Israeli airstrikes and shelling hammer the city and Israeli tanks seal the border. We'll go to Rafah for the latest. Then President Biden says he will not supply certain weapons to Israel to be used for an all-out invasion of Rafah.
Civilians have been killed in Gaza as a consequence of those bombs and other ways in which they go after population centers. I made it clear that if they go into Rafah, they haven't gone into Rafah yet. If they go into Rafah, I'm not supplying the weapons that have been used historically to deal with Rafah.
We'll speak with journalist and writer Nathan Thrall. He just won the Pulitzer Prize for his most recent book, A Day in the Life of Abed Salama, Anatomy of a Jerusalem Tragedy. And in India, in the largest election in the world that's underway now, close to a billion people are eligible to vote. We'll speak with the award-winning Indian author Siddharth Deb. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel continues to seal off Gaza's Rafah border crossing as the UN warns it's, quote, choking off the entry of life-saving aid, unquote. The UN adds many of the 600,000 children taking shelter in Rafah are, quote, highly vulnerable and at the edge of survival, unquote. Save the Children also warns humanitarian operations will come to a complete halt unless Israel changes course in Rafah. The aid group says three-quarters of all child patients that have been treated in a so-called safe zone near Rafah have blast injuries. Tens of thousands of Palestinians are once again on the move, though many say their next destination is unknown with no safe place to shelter in Gaza. As Israel prepares for its full-scale ground invasion of Rafah, Palestinians continue to die under aerial attacks.
We were baking bread. We came to blood and martyrs scattered. We're gathering them and body parts in pieces. The civil defense members came and gathered them in pieces. My friend died. They also picked him up in pieces. Everything is in pieces.
In an interview on CNN, President Biden said the U.S. will stop supplying certain weapons to Israel if its forces invade Rafah.
If they go into Rafah, I'm not supplying the weapons that have been used historically to deal with Rafah, to deal with the cities, to deal with that problem. We're going to continue to make sure Israel is secure in terms of Iron Dome and their ability to respond to attacks like came out of the Middle East recently. But it's just wrong. We're not going to supply the weapons and the artillery shells used that have been used.
Shells as well.
Yeah, artillery shells.
Israel's extreme right national security minister Itamar Ben-Gvir posted on X this morning, Hamas hearts Biden. President Biden was in Chicago Wednesday for another campaign fundraiser where he was met with protesters who blocked downtown streets. Meanwhile, in Tel Aviv, protesting hostage families clashed with police. Two arrests were made. The sister of a hostage was hospitalized. Her mother said in a social media video post, quote, "Bring back the hostages. Stop the war with Hamas." Everywhere in Gaza, health workers uncovered another 49 bodies at the decimated Al-Shifa hospital Wednesday. Most of the bodies were decomposed. Some were found headless. 520 bodies have been uncovered across three Gaza Strip hospitals in recent weeks after attacks and sieges by the Israeli military. Attacking hospitals is a war crime. Israel on Wednesday bulldozed 47 homes of the Palestinian Bedouin community in the Negev Desert, home to some 500 people. Israel's planning on building a highway on the site of the demolished homes, but the approval for the construction has yet to be granted. No alternative housing has been set up for the families who have now been rendered homeless. The Regional Council of Unrecognized Villages of Negev said the demolition was unprecedented in its, quote, scope of destruction and the hatred, unquote. Police have arrested scores more student protesters as part of a widening crackdown on encampments calling on schools to divest from Israel in the United States. At the University of Massachusetts Amherst, police raided a student encampment Tuesday night, arresting around 130. In Washington, D.C., police deployed tear gas as they broke up an encampment at George Washington University. 33 people were arrested. Police also broke up an encampment at the University of Houston. On Capitol Hill, Congressmember Rashida Tlaib held a press conference Wednesday where she praised student protesters.
These students are saying save lives no matter faith or ethnicity.
That's right. Yep.
This is something that I feel like is being completely ignored. Yep. Why are they out there? Mm-hmm. This is why we're proud. We're proud to use our position in office to bring these voices so you all don't forget why there are encampments, why there are movements in dissent around this country.
Students from George Washington University and other nearby schools joined Tlaib at the news conference.
Keep reading.
Here in New York City, faculty at the new school have launched the first pro-Palestine faculty encampment to protest the violent police crackdown on their students. The professors named the encampment after the Palestinian poet Rafat Al-Arir, who was killed in an Israeli airstrike in December.
Following police raids and violence, the new school faculty established the Rafat Al-Arir Faculty Solidarity Encampment. The call from students and Palestinians in Gaza is clear. We cannot give up. We must escalate and persevere to demand our universities divest, disclose, and boycott from the war profiteers and institutions justifying and aiding the genocide in Gaza.
Overseas, students at Trinity College in Dublin, Ireland, have ended their encampment after school officials agreed to divest from blacklisted Israeli companies that have ties to the occupied Palestinian territory. In Spain, the Senate of the University of Barcelona has approved a motion to break institutional and academic ties with Israel. Last month was the Earth's hottest April on record, making it the 11th consecutive month of breaking heat records. Extreme heat has plagued large swaths of Africa and Asia in particular, forcing school closures, destroying crops, and leading to hundreds of heat-related deaths. In Bangladesh, over a million Rohingya refugees living in camps in southeastern Cox's Bazar have been dealing with temperatures as high as 107 degrees Fahrenheit, with few options for cooling down.
This heat is unbearable, especially in our tarp-made homes. During the daytime, it has been difficult to stay inside as the tarp soaks in the heat.
Meanwhile, the UN's International Organization for Migration is warning heavy rains and extreme flooding has created over 200,000 climate refugees over the past week across Burundi, Kenya, Rwanda, Somalia, Ethiopia, and Tanzania. Kenya's declared a national day of mourning Friday for the more than 200 people who've died in the country. PowerShift Africa said, quote, "The fossil fuel industry and the politicians that fail to stand up to it have blood on their hands," he said. In other climate news, back here in the United States, lawmakers in Vermont passed a first-of-its-kind bill this week that would make fossil fuel companies pay for destruction caused by climate change. Last summer, Vermont saw historic flooding, which submerged the capital, Montpelier. Damage from the July storm cost the Northeast close to $2.2 billion to a federal estimate. In Baltimore, Maryland, the body of the sixth and last missing construction worker killed in the March collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge has been recovered. 37-year-old Jose Minor Lopez was originally from Guatemala. He had two young children. Last week, the body of 49-year-old Miguel Angel Luna Gonzalez was found. The FBI is reportedly looking into whether the massive Dali cargo ship violated a Civil War-era seaman's manslaughter statute when it struck the bridge, causing it to collapse. Here in New York, the family of Wynn Rosario, a 19-year-old from Queens who was killed by police, is demanding accountability for the teenager's death after the release last week of body cam video showing the fatal encounter inside his home. In late March, Wynn called 911 while experiencing a mental health crisis. The NYPD claim Rosario came at them with a pair of scissors when they fatally shot him, but the video shows the teen was on the other side of the kitchen. The officers first repeatedly tased him, then opened fire despite desperate pleas from Rosario's mother, who attempted to shield her son as she urged the officers not to shoot him. The killing has set off protests and intense anger among the Bangladeshi community in Queens. When Rosario's family, elected officials and community leaders spoke at a news conference in front of New York City Hall yesterday to demand justice for Wynn. This is Wynn's brother, Ucho Rosario.
The people that's supposed to serve and protect us are the ones that's killing us. The police was so aggressive and reckless that they could have killed my mom and me too in our own house.
Yeah.
If anyone that wasn't a cop did what Alangi and Francesco did, they would have already been in jail.
That's right.
But yet they're still collecting their paycheck from the city like nothing happened.
Wynn's brother and parents also described the NYPD mistreating his family and making them feel like criminals right after the officers killed Wynn. The U.S. House of Representatives overwhelmingly shot down Congressmember Marjorie Taylor Greene's attempt to oust fellow Republican Mike Johnson as House Speaker. House Democrats blasted the ongoing GOP Speaker saga, with Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries declaring, quote, Marjorie Taylor Greene and the extreme MAGA Republicans are chaos agents. Separately Wednesday, Speaker Johnson gathered with other Republican lawmakers in front of the Capitol to promote their so-called election integrity bill to stop residents who are not U.S. citizens from voting. Non-citizen voting is extremely rare. There's already a law prohibiting it. Speaker Johnson was joined by far-right figures, including Stephen Miller and Republican lawmakers Chip Roy and Mike Lee, who participated in efforts to overturn the 2020 election results. And in campaign news, independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is facing questions about his health after the New York Times revealed he had a parasitic worm in his brain and was diagnosed with mercury poisoning over a decade ago. In a 2012 divorce deposition, Kennedy admitted he had cognitive problems, including short and long-term memory loss. He said abnormalities observed by doctors in a brain scan were believed to be due to, quote, a worm that got into my brain and ate a portion of it, then died. Kennedy says he has fully recovered from both issues. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Mimi Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Tens of thousands of displaced Palestinians are fleeing Rafah as Israeli airstrikes and shelling hammer the eastern part of the city. Fuel, food, medicine, and other supplies have been cut off following Israel's seizure and closure of the Rafah border crossing with Egypt. The main hospital in the area has also been shut down. The World Food Program cannot reach its food warehouse near the Rafah crossing, and aid groups are warning they have only a few days of fuel remaining before humanitarian operations and all hospitals in Gaza begin to shut down. Since Monday, the UN estimates some 80,000 Palestinians have been displaced from Rafah, where over 1.4 million people have sought refuge. Families uprooted multiple times over the past 7 months have nowhere to go. Tent camps in some parts of Rafah have now vanished, springing up again further north along main roads in Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunus. Over the past 24 hours, more than 60 Palestinians were killed across Gaza, many of them in Rafah. The death toll in Gaza over the past 7 months is nearly 35,000, with more than 78,500 wounded.
For more, we go to Rafah, where we're joined by Dorothea Guichardo. She's the director of development of GLIA Project, currently on a medical mission in Gaza, joining us via video of a live shot outside the Kuwaiti hospital in Rafah, because there's bombing and gunfire in the area, making it dangerous to move. We thank you so much, Dorothea, for joining us. Can you explain what's happening in Rafah right now? I think there is the misconception that unless a full-scale ground invasion happens, there's very little going on. But over the last, 24 hours, about 60 people in Gaza have died, overwhelmingly in Rafah.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having me. I'm sorry you cut out just a little bit there. The internet here is not so good. The situation on the ground is dire. Everyone here is quite afraid. To say that there's not an incursion in Rafah right now is patently false. Throughout this entire day, I have heard bombs, explosions. I have heard heavy machine gun fire. And it seems to be creeping closer and closer to where we are in central Rafah.
And Dorothea, if you could describe what the situation is in hospitals. You were earlier this week in the last maternity hospital in Gaza, Emirati Hospital. See if you could describe the situation, the health situation for people in Rafah.
Yeah, the situation in the hospitals is tense. People are really anxious. Patients are worried about where they're going to be able to access health care, because as the incursion becomes closer and the threat of the Israeli army approaching the hospitals becomes more real, patients are afraid to go to the hospitals. Doctors themselves are...
Dorothea Guichardo has... Go ahead, Dorothea. Occasionally you freeze, but just keep going. I mean, this is incredible that we're able to speak to you there.
Right. Thank you. The healthcare providers are afraid to come into work. They are moving their families from East Rafah to West Rafah to the coast. So access to healthcare providers is lessening as the threat of invasion looms. 20 years of blockade in the Gaza Strip means that the healthcare sector was already low resource. This is exacerbated by this depraved war that Palestinians have been living through for the past 7 months.
And what are the medical supplies that people are working with? I mean, we've just heard that there's very little fuel remaining and there isn't much time before all hospitals in Gaza, of course, including in Rafah, begin to shut down. And I assume the situation in Rafah is worse. If you could explain what you know of what's happening in hospitals elsewhere and what the threats to hospitals in Rafah are now. For how long can they continue to operate, even minimally?
Even minimally, if no fuel comes in, we're looking at a maximum of 3 days. 3 days of fuel to supply these hospitals to maintain any level of healthcare. The situation is beyond dire. There are ongoing plans to try to bring Nasser Hospital back into working condition. You'll recall that Nasser was besieged by the Israelis a few times. This is where the mass graves were uncovered. It is not ready yet. So if we take a look at the NICU in particular, it has 5 incubators and it has no staff. There's no capacity to bring any children that are in the hospital in Emirati, in Rafah, to Nasser for any kind of care. It's just not functional yet. So it's devastating.
So you're talking about fuel. There's also, of course, medical equipment, food that's not getting in. And what about workers, healthcare workers? We've interviewed so many doctors who've gone into Gaza to help. If the border area is closed with the Israeli military moving in and seizing control of the Gaza side of Gaza side of the Rafah border.
So we had been entering through the Rafah border since early January, all of the medical teams that were coming in to work in the hospitals. Those delegations with them, medical supplies, medicine, equipment, anything that they would need to perform their duties, anything that we could do to plug the holes in the sinking ship. It was the most reliable way to get anything inside of Gaza, and that has been completely cut off. No humanitarian workers can come in. No additional aid is coming in. And in fact, no humanitarian workers can go out. And that's also problematic because people are burning out and we need to be able to replenish our support.
And Dorothea, as we mentioned earlier, you were to join us outside the Kuwaiti hospital where we had an AP live shot set up, but you weren't able to get there because of bombing and gunfire. What's the situation outside other hospitals? And is Kuwaiti hospital functioning at all? And if so, at what level? How are people able to, medical personnel, able to get in and out if that's the situation, if it's so risky and dangerous in that area?
So you did cut out just a little bit, but I'm assuming you're asking how we're moving when the situation is so volatile. We are moving on an emergent need basis. So the hospitals absolutely require assistance in terms of staffing. We've made the decision to continue staffing these hospitals that we are that we have been working with because our presence there gives them some measure of encouragement and some measure of hope. And so we're continuing to supply whatever services we can, while at the same time monitoring the situation. So we're literally taking it hour by hour.
And is it at all possible now, Dorothea, for wounded patients to go anywhere, wounded patients in Rafah to go anywhere for a better, I suppose, a medical treatment?
Their only options are to go up toward Khan Yunis, where Nasser Hospital, European Hospital and Al-Aqsa Hospital are located. These are understaffed, overwhelmed. Nasser is non-functional. And let's not forget the patients that are requiring life-saving surgeries that would require them to be evacuated out of Gaza. They cannot leave. 2 days ago, I watched a baby die that had swelling around its brain. It required a particular kind of surgery that simply could not be done here in Gaza. And the request couldn't be fulfilled because the Israelis have taken the Rafah crossing.
And what about the stream of humanity? Palestinians who are being told they have to leave areas of Rafah right now. Where are they going? Do you see people on the move for what, the first, the second, the third, the fourth time, as they already came to Rafah and are already displaced?
Sorry, you cut out just a little bit there. Yes, we're seeing a mass displacement of people. This is a population that has been, on average, displaced at least three times. And to my knowledge, that's the first time this has ever happened in any area of the world. The people in East Rafah are trying to move, but do consider that many of them can't afford it. With fuel being so expensive, it's difficult for them to afford a vehicle to even bring their belongings. So you're seeing some in donkey carts. You're seeing people moving with things in hand because they just have no other way of shifting from where they are into a supposed safe zone. Because let's make it very clear, there is no safe zone in Gaza. Every single area of Gaza is subject to attack.
Dorothea Guichardo, we thank you so much for being with us. We are just very relieved we could speak to you and that you're okay. Director of Development of GLIA Project, currently on a medical mission in Gaza, speaking to us from Rafah. Coming up, we'll be joined by, well, the now Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Nathan Thrall. His book of Abed Salama, Anatomy of a Jerusalem Tragedy. He's usually in Jerusalem. Today, he'll join us from Berlin, Germany. Stay with us.
I wait for you. Heaven on this perfect string of love and drink your soup of magpies in a pottery bowl. It looks as I am now, brown, round, and warm. Chime on.
Fortunately Gone by The Breeders, engineered by Steve Albini, the seminal musician and recording engineer, died Tuesday at the age of 61 of a heart attack. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
President Biden has said for the first time he would not supply certain weapons to Israel to be used for an all-out invasion of Rafah. Biden's comments came after his administration's decision last week to pause a shipment of heavy bombs to Israel, while at the same time approving another $827 million for other weapons and equipment to the Israeli military. In an interview on CNN Wednesday, Biden responded to a question about the pause transfer of 2,000-pound bombs and was asked whether those bombs have been used by Israel to kill civilians in Gaza. He was also asked whether Israel's attacks on Rafah have crossed a red line. He was interviewed by CNN's Aaron Burnett.
Civilians have been killed in Gaza as a consequence of those bombs, ways in which they go after population centers. I made it clear that if they go into Rafah, they haven't gone into Rafah yet. If they go into Rafah, I'm not supplying the weapons that have been used historically to deal with Rafah, to deal with the cities, to deal with that problem. We're going to continue to make sure Israel is secure in terms of Iron Dome and their ability to respond to attacks like came out of the Middle East recently. But it's just wrong. We're not going to supply the weapons and the artillery shells used that have been used.
Artillery shells as well.
Yeah, artillery shells.
So just to understand what they're doing right now in Rafah, is that not going into Rafah as you don't?
No, they haven't gone into the population centers. What they did is right on the border. And it's causing problems with right now in terms of with Egypt, which I've worked very hard to make sure we have a relationship and help. But I've made it clear to Bibi and the War Cabinet, they're not going to get our support if, in fact, they go in these population centers. We're not walking away from Israel's security. We're walking away from Israel's ability to wage war in those areas.
So it's not over your red line yet?
Not yet.
President Biden's comments come as his administration has delayed issuing a report to determine whether Israel's violated U.S. and international law in its war on Gaza. For more, we're joined by the Jerusalem-based journalist and writer Nathan Thrall. He just won the Pulitzer Prize this week for his most recent book, A Day in the Life of Abed Salama, Anatomy of a Jerusalem Tragedy, which tells the story of Israel's occupation of the West Bank through one family's tragedy. He's also the author of the only language they understand, forcing compromise in Israel and Palestine. Nathan is joining us today from Berlin, Germany. Welcome to Democracy Now! So, Nathan, if you can start off by responding to President Biden's comments, saying that the shipment of 2,000-pound bombs is being delayed because they don't want them to be used in Gaza. This doesn't relate to the emergency funding for Israeli military that he just signed off on, but it is highly significant. Can you talk about what this means for Israel and the rage of Netanyahu and Ben-Gavir and others? Ben-Gavir just posting, Biden hearts Hamas.
Thank you, Amy. It's too little too late. It is a step in the right direction, but the administration has said that it has not made a final determination even about these paused weapons. Biden said something very important. It's wrong. He also said something important months ago, which is that Israel is bombing indiscriminately, and it's doing that indiscriminate bombing with U.S. weapons. So it is very simple for Biden to end this and to have ended this a long time ago. And it's not by threatening to pause a small portion of the weapons that are coming in. Very early in this war, Israel could not continue to conduct it without resupply from the United States. The United States is fully complicit. I am a U.S. taxpayer, and I am paying to kill Palestinian civilians.
So, Nathan, if you've just mentioned, ending the war, and there was a possibility a ceasefire proposal earlier this week was accepted by Hamas in a move that was that surprised many, including the ceasefire, which was negotiated, put together by Egypt and Qatar. And just days earlier, before Hamas accepted the ceasefire on April 29th, Antony Blinken, Secretary of State, had said the proposal was extraordinarily generous, on the part of Israel and that Hamas was the only obstacle to a ceasefire. And Israel has now said that the proposal falls far short of its demands, but it's continuing its negotiations in Cairo. So if you could tell us what you think the main points of contention are and how much that proposal